Hello all, and welcome to the first episode of the Doctor's Office podcast. This one is definitely going to be different from the one on YouTube because we're going to be talking about a multitude of different things that are still kind of comic book related. So today we are talking about Absolute Power from DC Comics, one of their big events, versus Blood Hunt from Marvel, which was their big event. And I have a friend with. Go and introduce yourself.
Hey, y'all, it's the captain. You know, we here, the dark skin bandit, we in the building. How you doing, doctor?
The radio voice.
Got to lay it on thick. It's great. I just woke up from a nap, too, so like my voice is like perfectly.
Oh, my God. I can't wait to take a nap. I am so sleepy. Okay. So, having read both of them, what did you think about both Absolute Power and Blood Hunt and basically what they ended up ultimately leading to in the respective universes?
So I enjoyed the aspect that both of these books served a purpose to just spruce things up a little bit in both their universes. I do think that they both had a solid start. Because I remember I'd be reading Blood Hunt initially and being excited about the reveal of Blade being a villain now and having to fight the whole entirety of the world, essentially. But I think the ending for Blood Hunt was very rushed and very sloppy, in my opinion, versus reading the ending of Absolute Power. The ending of Absolute Power seemed pretty tight. I was concerned initially when I saw the aspect. I thought they were going to like do some time travel stuff with the with Chronoman's hourglass when that was found initially by Green Arrow. But I love the aspect that they use it in regards to it being inside of each of the Amazos and that being how they beat those. So I think it was a lot more tightly written in regards to Absolute Power.
I don't know. Absolute Power, I thought, started really good. However, they relied more on the tie-ins to tell a majority of the story. So, like, they have the main story in, like, the four or five main issues, but in order to get from point A to point B, you had to read Task Force 7 or 8, whichever one it is, in order to keep up what was happening with not only the Amazos, but everybody else. Then you also had to read Teen Titans to make sure that you kept up with what they were doing, because what they ended up doing towards the end is how they ended up winning. Then you had to keep up with the Superman one, I want to say. I can't remember if it was the Superman one or not. But it was like all of the important pieces were in Task Force, Teen Titans, and one other book. And then whatever, and I don't really know why they did the origins of Amanda Waller, because I didn't care about any of those that information. That bitch was crazy. And trying to convince us otherwise by giving her this sad origin story about how she became afraid of Superman. Like, her entire motive was that she was afraid of Superman. How did it expand to everyone else? I'm like, why is this story here?
So I'm not mad at that, just for the fact that we've never really gotten a peek behind the scenes of why Amanda Waller is the way she is. She's always been a dope, integral staple in regards to DC Comics, but I feel like it was nice to finally, like, one, make her unhinged, because in this story, she was definitely unhinged and off the fucking chain.
Oh, for sure.
So I enjoyed really her. You already know how I am when it comes to the black representation in a lot of these stories. So the fact that she was, like, the villain and, like, a very formidable villain in a major DC, like, event, I thought that was really dope for me. You know, shout out to Dr. Umar. But, it was dope to see that. I think that, to your point, you're accurate, but I think it's two sides of the same coin, because when I'm looking at the tie-ins for Blood Hunt, a lot of those tie-ins didn't really matter. So
they really didn't, several, especially the Jack, the one about Union Jack. That one definitely did not matter. It didn't have anything to do with the story. However, the ones that did have something to do with the story Because the Black Panther one was definitely like important to the story. But it didn't hinge on, I guess it didn't really too much lean on the tie-ins to tell the missing parts of the story, because they gave you the chunk of the story in the main parts, and then they were like, oh, and just by the way, over here on this side, like, this is what's happening. So like the Doctor Strange one was to set up Doctor Doom becoming the Sorcerer Supreme, so I was fine with that. Like, some of them were to set up other things that are branching off, because this one was supposed to change the status quo, and that was like their whole thing, was this is supposed to change the status quo of the Marvel Universe. So the ones that were getting thrown in, I could not stand the fact that Venom even had one. Had no idea why Venom was in here, only for it to start Venom War. And I enjoyed some of Venom War, and I was like, y'all could have just tipped Venom War somewhere else. You had vampires in the Venom story for like all of 0.5 seconds, and you raised somebody who didn't even matter in here. And I'm like, why is he being raised from the dead? Nobody even likes him. What is he here? Only for it to be part of a complete different story.
You remind me of that era where Bape was a big thing, and they put, not Bape, but Supreme was a big thing, and they put Supreme on everything, like Supreme Crowbar, Supreme backpacks. Like everything that was any sort of like sellable, they would throw that label on there. That's what it felt like with Blood Hunt. It was like, hey, any tie-in having any villain or any hero, cool, we just go throw Blood Hunt on the title to get you to buy it. So it looked flashier at that point.
I was glad that they only had two issues. So like, what you call it, only had three issues. Union Jack, I think, only had like three or four issues. I think it only had three. And then the Venom one only had two or three, but the main people who had like something to do with the rest of the universe. I like how they changed Miles Morales, giving him the vampire powers on top of his Spider-Man powers, and then he ends up getting a new suit from Black Panther. Then we get Black Panther out here taking over dimensions with his new vampire powers. Like, I like how they twisted those, but then on the same side, how essentially all of this that DC went through was to start Justice League Unlimited, Justice League Unlimited is starting out really solid for these first two issues. However, the way that they went about it for the characters, making Green Arrow like this pivotal role, because, and his whole entire reasoning for this is, we don't talk anymore. I was like, it's giving my mother's name is Martha. And doing that.
I enjoy that a lot, though. When you look at like the older DC comics, like the Justice League, their active, constant communication was such an integral part of it. Because I think back then it was like Martian Manhunter having them all on a connected wavelength. So I'm like, and that kept them out of a lot of trouble. And I think, I don't know, I enjoyed the aspect of it. And I really like the fact that a lot of, I'll say B and C tier characters got a lot of shine in this issue. Well, not issue, but this story. Like Nightwing being a leader among men in this was really dope to me. And it was fine. It was fine because, again, he's been around for a while. He has experience. He's led a team or two at this point, being the Titans or he didn't really lead Red Hood and Outlaws, but I still call him a leader.
No, I mean, he did kind of just like, but they've had him over being like the leader of the Titans, and then they have him back and forth between being the leader of the Titans and then being over Bloodhaven. So like, they've been pushing him more and more, and I was glad when they actually, like, because the Trinity couldn't fucking get their shit together, and it took Nightwing having to step out and be like, everybody shut the hell up so we can all follow directions and do instructions. But then it was like, prior to this, to Green Arrow's point, prior to this, everybody broke up. So like, they, and this is like maybe the fifth or sixth time that the Justice League has broken up. And even then, they were having great communication with each other while they were a team, but it was just so many things happening, so many moving parts, people with children, like him and Damian, and then Superman, John, and Wonder Woman. Then the whole thing with Supercore and Lex Luthor. Like, there was like so many moving pieces, and everybody just like called it quits on the Justice League. And it was like, Green Arrow then went on with his whole entire family, that whole gigantic family that he has with Red Arrow and all this stuff. And like, the start of this was you looking for Red Arrow and then deciding that, well, the Justice League doesn't talk anymore, so I think I should do this and believe in Amanda Waller's cause and have Martian Manhunter plant a thing in my mind so that I can totally believe what she's saying, but actually, like, and it was just like so many like things that he just mixed together, and I'm just like, you were one of the reasons that the Justice League stopped talking. All of you guys were a reason why Justice League stopped talking, but without your, like, without you communicating with them, they were already thinking about doing the Justice League Unlimited, like Batman said. It was something that they were in the process of building because they had come to the same conclusion that niggas wasn't talking.
It was kind of funny, I ain't gonna lie. He's like, yeah, we gotta talk more. And they're like, hey, can we tell them? Should we tell them?
Right,
yeah,
right. Tell them. We were already doing this. Had to have said something to us, you would have known about it. But you decided to go the long way around.
Yeah, that shit was hilarious, I'm not gonna lie.
It was. When he said that, I was like, oh my God.
And some of the tie-ins, I'm really glad that some of these characters got a lot more time to shine. Like, I'm not gonna lie, this story and this arc, I guess, for lack of a better term, I've never seen a better version of Zatanna than I did in the story. That monologue she went off on with Superman and that the tie-in with him where she was
announcing
her and some of the other heroes who, like, I don't have an alter ego or a different to hide. Like, I am Zatanna. Zatanna is me. So if you take away my magic, who am I at that point? The family. I was like, damn, that's tough. Like, who wrote this shit knows his character really well or really had something to say with this. And I really enjoyed her. Like I said, I enjoyed a lot of the stuff with, this is something I hate. I'm not going to lie. As a avid lover of the Green Lantern and the Green Lantern Corps, why the fuck did you just randomly, out of the blue, just create the Sorrow Lanterns?
Hello? I was so confused. How was I? What? Is he here? He
served no purpose, and I know they're probably gonna spin him back around and try to do some more stuff with him and like probably other Green Lantern stuff, which it feels
the Green Lantern thing was very confusing because after we get out of Absolute Power and into the DC All-In stories, the Green Lanterns were in the middle of a civil war and they needed Star Sapphire to come assist. And Kyle Rayner got brought back from the dead to become a White Lantern. And I'm like, I'm understanding what was the point of the Sorrow Lantern because y'all put him in this civil war that you're having to be opposite of Carol. Like, I don't understand.
What annoys me about him is that bro is essentially just a red pill man. He's got his heart broken by a woman, and now all women are bad. I will never love again. And I'm like, so you're telling me on planet Earth, he is the only man to get his heart broken to that extent so bad
that he has to become a lantern.
He became not just a lantern of any core, but like his own original core now with his own like power battery and emotional. I'm like, out of everywhere in the universe, out of all these events that go on, you're talking about him more sad than him or sad before this? Because he got his heart moving because he got the voice. And he's talking
another thing that I was confused about was the Flash, because the Flash also had a tie-in. I keep wanting to say a spin-off, a tie-in, in which case they said that at the end of all of that, Barry Allen lost his connection, or all of the Flashes lost their connection to the Speed Force. But then that's not true. And that's one thing that they left open. And I'm just like, that's very confusing because that's not true. Because what's his face? Just, I think Wally just went to go, is on vacation, quote unquote, with some fucking dinosaurs. And I'm like,
this isn't all fun, I'm not gonna lie.
It's really not. It's very confusing. I have no idea what's happening. I would assume it's because I've started at the DC All-In things and him and whoever the hell else he's with, plus his two kids, are in some land where there are dinosaurs. They're not fighting them or anything. There's just dinosaurs that are there, and they're fighting a frog lady, and they've now run into a man who lives there who is like a Viking, and he has people. And I'm like, but they go back and forth between this place and the Watchtower. So I don't understand what exactly the story is. I'm very lost. And I'm like, is it me? Am I tripping?
See, the only DC All-In story I've started was the Black Lightning one, which I got to read. I got to read issue two. And because issue two is out right now, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, because I've only got the first issue, but I haven't read any other ones thus far.
Listen, that Wonder Woman DC All-In story, because it's everything is taking place immediately after. So the Wonder Woman DC All-In story that they have going on, they've killed Steve Trevor.
Oh, no.
Steve Trevor is currently in the underworld. He is in hell. And Wonder Woman has made her daughter.
She's like the whole clay thing sculpted.
Yes, she has made her daughter, and quite literally all of the one. So it was Cassie, Donna Troy, Yara, and Cheetah simultaneously robbing banks, stealing money, like murder. Like Cheetah murdered someone in a hotel. And they're all checking in with Wonder Woman because the people who murdered Steve Trevor, she found out who they were and just started attacking like their people, their power, their money. And I said, see, this is how you get your lick back without going super fucking crazy. Because she could have went on a killing spree her damn self and decided to be an at-home mom and let everybody else.
No,
everybody else was gonna go. She was like, you go here, you go here, you go here. So that one's good. I don't really care for the Flash one. I stopped covering the Flash one because I don't know what's going on. The Green Lantern one I also stopped covering because I was very confused. Them trying to get everybody's powers back together, I think is interesting. So the question, that's a really good DC All-In story. The Shazam one is not good. I don't know what's going on with that. That one's also really confusing.
Plastic Man yet? Has he been touched and all that?
Mm-mm.
No, I know he's like intangible now, so that'd be stretchy.
Yeah, so that's the Atom Project just started, and they are actually trying to get Captain Atom to come back to assist because they just got Atom Smasher, his powers back, and he damn near died. Like, he was in so much pain, so they said that they need another Atom to help. So they have Ryan Choi and Ray Palmer, but they need Captain Atom to come assist with the kind of power that he has. So I think they're going to try to get him to come help so that they can give everybody their powers back. Metamorpho started. I don't know. They haven't said anything about Major Force. The only person, I didn't even know what they were doing with Captain Atom until the Atom Project started. Because when at the end of the second Justice League Unlimited book, when they said, I think we need to bring in another Atom, my assumption was the original Atom, but then the Atom Project started and it was Captain Atom, and I was like, maybe they'll bring in Captain Atom because his powers are mimicking what it is that they need to get everybody's power switched back.
I will say one thing I'm glad they did is they're doing with the multiverse stuff for now, like cutting that off. It's probably going to come back at some point, but I'm like, okay, we're just going to focus on this world we're trying to build. We're going to leave the multiverse alone for now.
I like that they're both doing that. Marvel and DC are both doing that because the whole situation with the tip in power. So, like, one world under Doom is about to start now that he's the Sorcerer Supreme. Then we have Brother Voodoo offering Storm to come teach at the Strange Academy because he's still headmaster over there. They haven't really said anything else about Doctor Strange. I would assume that they're going to do something with that, with the One World Under Doom stuff. Kang the Conqueror has entered the chat, prior to.
I saw that during Venom War. I'm like, what the fuck is Kang doing here? What is Kang? What does he have to do with
it? Well, now he's entered it with the Avengers because there was something that he needed. It was like a database that he needed. And he's teamed up with a time displaced version of Black Cat's father and Black Cat. So the three of them went to go steal it while the Avengers were trying to steal it. And the guy that happens at the end of it's just like, everything is going to Kang's like liking, basically. And I was like, so Kang, a conqueror, has entered the chat. Okay. And then Dr. Doom has requested that Storm come talk to him. Okay. Again. I said, Lord Jesus. And we just also found out that Bast can't help Miles Morales with his vampire problem directly because he's a Nazis champion.
Which that was like, I was like, okay. I love Miles Morales so much. But Jesus Christ, can we chill out on giving him more and more and more blessed abilities? This man is a spider totem, a vampire. He has kinetic electricity, electric abilities that allow him to essentially create electric constructs. And he has like a super, he has Daredevil vision now, apparently, where he can like see shit in the dark damn near. Dude's a I already said he's a vampire. His vibranium armor now, so he, that's David, yeah, perfectly suited for him, that takes away 90% of the downside of him being a vampire. Because I thought that was going to be an interesting thing of him trying to control the spider mm-hmm. stuff versus the vampire stuff. But now he just has an indestructible suit that takes away all the difficulty out of that. And now he is a representation of a Nazi now.
I did like that because they did hint at him being a spider totem a few issues ago. So they did hint at that. But Black Panther was like, why didn't you tell me that? He was like I was supposed to know. I have no idea what you people were even talking about. And now the next issue is actually because Bast is like, you know, I can try to help you. I mean, I'm not the one who like helped Black Panther. That was my sister, but I can try to help you. And Anansi's like, cool. Well, the only way that this can happen is if you guys pass a test. And he's like, what's the test? He was like, nothing. You just have to tell a story. And he was like, I don't know how to tell a story. He's like, oh, don't worry about it. I'll set it up for you. The story is who is going to win between him and Black Panther.
Oh, wow.
So that's exactly how that book ended.
Side note, when the fuck did Anansi come out? Because I remember in Bloodhunt, them having there was a big thing about Bloodhunt was those ancestral gods of the different religions with Bast, with not Horus. I'm blanking on. I can't remember the names now, but
yeah,
Anansi and all of that. Where is he in all of this?
He wasn't there initially. I think because I want to say he was elsewhere because he's not necessarily a fighter. He's just like the story weaver. So he wasn't really there. But now that they're now that he's entered Bast's ancestral plane, basically looking for help, she took that as an offense because she was like, you brought somebody else's champion here. And Black Panther was like, what? And Anansi was like, well, how is he supposed to know? Nobody knew that. Nobody knew that except for me.
Even when I remember when they introduced a spider totem ideal, they never really mentioned the god that they were connected to. I know what they talked about what the Panther and Bast and some of the other ones, but they never discussed the Nazi and the spider.
Yeah, they never said they never said who it was. But when they said spider totem, my mind immediately went to that. And I was like, I wonder if they're going to reveal that at some point. But then they didn't say anything until just now. So when he came on screen, on the page, I was like, oh, Lord, I knew it. I knew it. I knew it.
Yeah, I need more stories with him where one, we need to depower this nigga at some point, because who can he fight at this point? At this point, why is Black
Panther? And he had the heart herb too. That's how he got there. That's how he got
into her space.
The heart shaped herb so that he could go into her space.
So this thing is a Black Panther now? Oh my God. Okay. All right.
This shit is so funny right now.
They're just like, all right, we're going to give him every power in the book. Electrical Negro who? Huh? He is a god now.
I mean, overall, I liked both stories. I wished that the tie-in, because I do like tie-ins, especially when they're like really good and have some, but it was like some of them were really confusing because you couldn't tell when it was. So like the Wonder Woman one, when everybody had gotten their powers taken at the same time in the main story. In the Wonder Woman tie-in, the people who are magical are in a building separate from everybody else. So it's Wonder Woman, Madame Xanadu, John Constantine, Jason Blood, Detective Chimp. All of them are like together. Mary Marvel and all of them, they're all together in a separate building. And I'm like, well, when is this? And then... No, they weren't even in the Tower of Fate. It was just a building somewhere. And they were all playing cards. And here comes an Amazo to fight them and take their powers. And I'm like, but they had their powers taken away already. Literally all of them were together because everybody was fighting and their powers were taken away already. So what are we talking about? And it was confusing also because it seems like everybody had their powers taken away, but the only one who didn't was Barry Allen.
Hell, I'll give you one further with that, and then I was confused a little bit with Alan Scott and the star force and how that shit works. Mm-hmm. His abilities taken away. He was just like, psych, nigga, get my shit back.
and then Amazo had the powers, and then he was telling him how to use them. Because then he was like, oh, well, yeah, this is free will, so, like, you know, you can make a choice. And I said, see, when they were trying to make Alan Scott be the solution to all of it, because I said when he was talking to Alan Scott and he had absorbed his power and then he was confused by what the choices were on his screen, I said, she's about to lose one because Alan Scott's free will is stronger than everybody else's, or his willpower is stronger than everybody else's. So with his willpower being stronger than everybody else's, this Amazo getting free will is going to be a problem for Amanda Waller, and she doesn't know that. But then, like, they didn't even talk about that part being the issue. It was being a superhero in itself is a superpower. I was like, what are we talking about?
Let's talk about that. Because, bro, part of the kookiness for stuff, you know what? I understand we're a comic book, so comic books need to be kooky and nonsensical at times. I understand that. But when you tell me of something that was a ruffle, not ruffle, but something that was, a bump in the road for Amanda Waller's plans, mm-hmm. was the aspect that these robots were absorbing conscious.
Listen.
It was kind of, that's why I kind of liked it, because it was funny because they acknowledged it in the book. Waller's like,
yeah,
being a superhero is a power. What the fuck?
Right? Being a good person is a fucking superpower. What?
So, plan for this. You can't plan for that. And I'm just like, okay, that's kind of stupid, but you know what? It's super, they're comic books. They should be a little stupid. And so I enjoyed it. It was funny. I don't think that played a major. I'm glad it didn't play a major part in the how the story wrapped up. If it played an integral role in why she lost, I would be mad. But I thought it was cool, kooky. And I think we're gonna have some dope stuff with Jade Stone in the future. I think he's gonna be a part of the Lantern stuff going forward. If I remember.
Yeah, I think also another thing is Airwave being so important to getting Amanda Waller caught up in her own words. I thought that was interesting, considering how in the Justice League Unlimited book, he's supposed to be killing the Justice League. And I was like, how are you going to do that? Turn that phone off. What are we talking about?
Hey, you may pull a Iron Man and just like hit Batman shit with an EMP midair. And now he's going down.
I was like, okay, I do like how it leads into Justice League Unlimited. And then we have each team that handles the situation is different. So in the first book, the first team to handle what was actually going on was Batman, Blue Beetle, Star Sapphire, Superman, Kid Flash. So Wallace West, actually, the Black Kid Flash. And Black Lightning and Star Sapphire, because Star Sapphire is in hero training and they put her with Black Lightning. And Airwave helped from the Watchtower. So I thought that team to start was interesting because we don't really see Wallace doing too many things, and having Star Sapphire be in hero training because she's not a hero literally 90% of the time she's on page was also interesting. The second team for the second issue was Wonder Woman. And this is after Batman and Blue Beetle had gotten attacked by parademons or whatever the fuck. It was Wonder Woman, Superman, Mary Marvel, Black Lightning, Star Sapphire, Dr. Occult, and Martian Manhunter. And I said, y'all pulled Dr. Occult out of your ass?
Dr. Occult is hilarious.
Because where the hell has he been?
You know, the one thing I love about this story and the way they're handling this, again, it's part of the reason why I love the Justice League Unlimited cartoon series as much as I did. Mm-hmm. When you're doing this, you're able to essentially do what comic books have done forever, where when somebody's not selling or somebody's not popular, cool, let's throw them alongside somebody big. So the Flash and Green Arrow, or Green Arrow and Green Lantern, or the Flash and Green Lantern. Like, we'll pair these guys up and put them in situations where they can shine as a duo and show their relationship to popularize another character. So the fact that we're getting a Justice League Unlimited series again, to where smaller characters like maybe a Ted Kord, Blue Beetle, or whoever else can be in these stories and be like shoulder to shoulder with a Batman, a Wonder Woman, a Superman, you can really look to capitalize on this moment in time and get a lot of these characters' popularity up. How you could probably introduce some original characters or bring back characters like a Static or whatever else and really like, all right, let's try to get them back in the popular eye again with the story out or with Lil' Bean.
Right, and I like how most of everybody is. So everybody was brought back to life and everything. So you have Ted Kord and Jaime, both Blue Beetles, up on the ship, basically running the ship. Like, and then because Red Tornado got destroyed during Absolute Power, he's like eyes and ears. Mr. Terrific is up there also assisting with things that are going on. They brought Renee Montoya in as the Question to be the sheriff up on the Watchtower, which apparently was fucking needed because Eradicator came up there and started doing shit. Everybody has their own headquarter, like auxiliary headquarters. So the JSA is up there, even though they have a headquarters on Earth too. So the JSA has a place to go. The Teen Titans has a place to go. Then they have like the Flash family has like a section. The Bat family has a section. So every like this, they made this bigger than what the fuck the cartoon had. Mm-hmm. And then they're introducing like these new characters. So like the Challengers, who are human people going out on these missions, and they have supers as backup. But then everybody can still handle whatever it is that they need to handle down on Earth. And if they need assistance, they get their assistance, like them putting Donna Troy in charge of the Teen Titans so that Nightwing can go handle whatever he needs to do in Bloodhaven. So I like that they're moving people around and like having the JSA do what it is that the JSA does. The same thing with how Marvel has done, even though the X-Men did not participate in Blood Hunt, the X-Men stories that happened after Blood Hunt are kind of running concurrently. Wolverine participated in Blood Hunt.
We got Wolverine, Jubilee, Magic, Psylocke, Kitty Pryde. Was it Kitty Pryde in one story for a little bit, I thought? Or maybe I don't remember. Maybe it's the Jubilee story that I'm thinking about.
I think it's Jubilee, but like most of the X-Men didn't like, so like the new X-Men team that they have right now, so it's Cyclops, Psylocke, Beast, Quentin Quire, Temper, Magic, and Juggernaut, their stories were like the one shots, which were cool. And Psylocke's actually, I think hers with the guy that she was with, she's still with that same guy.
Yeah, I really
enjoy. So her with her separate series, still with the same guy, and even in the From the Ashes story, she's still with that same guy. So that I like how theirs is running concurrent with what's happening with Bloodhunt. So they're still running into, or they're going to end up running into things, and they know that T'Challa is a vampire, and the X-Men and the Avengers just formed an alliance, which is very interesting considering how One Nation Under Doom is about to start. I said, that is definitely an alliance that you fucking need.
Yeah. You know what? I fucking hate Cap in a lot of instances, but the one thing I always find funny is whenever the X-Men are about to question, Buddy will turn into the most bigot clan leader in regards to how she raised with them. Like, Cap, for whatever reason, does not. Like, all his morality.
He does not. Oh, my God.
See, he does not fuck with the X-Men like that.
Oh, my God. So, and that's why I'm glad that's version of Cap, that Steve Rogers is not part of the Avengers. He has his own thing going on, but he still makes time for Sam. That is definitely something that I appreciate. He still makes time for Sam.
You see, seeing Sam at the forefront is really nice to see. In this and then in movies, whatever else. Like we're starting to see a lot more characters that were not as prevalent like 5 years ago get put in the forefront and this stuff. Granted, because Marvel usually adapts to the movies and they change the comics around to meet that, but it's good to see that.
Yeah.
I'm excited
definitely
to see
for sure.
I'm excited to see what we do going forward with it, but I don't know. Back to the main point though that you had originally with like the comparison between the two. I do think one thing that I enjoyed about Absolute Power over Bloodhunt was his stakes were actually stakes. There were actually people that lost their powers and their powers were stayed gone for a while. There were characters that died that stayed dead for a little bit. And I even the way that it started out, I do have an inherent bias with Bloodhunt because I'm a horror fan. So like the vampires and the blood and all that, all the creepiness of the Blood Coven was cool. But bro, legit seeing like people, heroes dropping like flies left and right in Absolute Power was dope. Like Superman got shot. Seeing fear and panic and the issues it caused for Black Lightning when his powers for him and Thunder and Lightning just went down. I was like, damn, okay. It feels like this event impacted more heroes than Bloodhunt. It felt like everyone was fighting the vampires, but it was like another day at the office type of thing. Absolute Power felt like it looked more of a lingering effect on the hero world at large versus Bloodhunt to me.
Yeah, and I think really for Bloodhunt, because I do agree, but for Bloodhunt, I think the stakes were more geared towards, and I'm not trying to be funny, I think it was more geared towards the Black people because the Black people were the ones most affected. So Blade is still in isolation and trying to like get back into himself. Like that literally him being possessed by Varnay took the biggest mental toll on him. And thinking back, and it was a point that nobody hasn't touched on, the fact that before Bloodhunt started, when it was just his Blade series, that Blade had to drink Dracula's blood in order to defeat the villain that he was fighting in his story. And that is how Varnay became powerful enough to take him over as a vessel. He was made a perfect vessel after that. And then furthermore, when Dracula was talking to Miles Morales, he was making comments talking about, you know, this is something when you've been fighting for something for so long, you deserve a little bit back. You set this up? Was it you? Nobody has said anything. And I'm like, it is driving me absolutely nuts because the ones that it affected the most was Brielle, Miles Morales, Black Panther, Sam, because Sam was betrayed once by Blade because him and Blade were friends, and then the fact that he lost T'Challa to being a vampire, had to leave his ass there as he was being taken by the vampires because he sacrificed himself so that Sam could leave. And then he doesn't even stay in the dimension because his wife is on the team. So it's like it's taking a toll on him too. And I'm like, you know, it's affecting the black people more than it is anybody else. Are y'all trying to say something?
I gotta ask, what's that? What's going on with Brielle right now? Is she actually being used in any effective way after this event, or are they just sideline her again?
Not yet. I think they're supposed to be coming up with something for her specifically, from what I remember, but it might be in the story with her dad.
See, this is what annoys me. Sure. You have this major event. You make her the central reason and the central solution to fix the entire event. She then proceeds to do so. And there are like three other people or four other people that are getting a push before her right after that ends. Like, in my perspective, if you did all of that to gas up Brielle, and you so much so that you like put her in books for Dracula and put her on covers and do all this stuff with promotional material for her, she should either, because you already know me, I'd prefer a solo series and involving other people. But even if you want to throw her on a team or throw her in with other people, you need to do something with her really fast after that and capitalize off that momentum, in my opinion.
That's true. I think they're supposed to be doing a solo series for her, but I don't actually remember because they haven't said too much about it. I would hope that they would give her some more, but it's also, they've also gotten kind of just like the complaints about, if you are going to have a story about Brielle, with Brielle, for Brielle, somebody black needs to write it.
Yeah, I do think
that. Because y'all keep leaning on these other writers who are non-black writers, and you come up with things like inviting Captain America to the cookout and shit like that.
Oh, God. Oh, that's not bad.
Like, so I don't want them to rush a story and then just pick a writer. I want them to get a good black female, preferably, writer, and give Brielle a good story in relation to what has happened, what mental toll it had on her with the fact that she had to assist in stabbing her father, and all of the stuff that happened, her teaming up with Daredevil for a little bit, whatever, what have you. Give her something but of substance. So that's why I haven't really too much been like, where's Brielle? Because my other question was also, where's Blade? Because they literally have Blade in a completely different country minding his business. And I'm like, I'm fine with that, because the Avengers and everybody else is very distrusting of him, even though that shit wasn't his fault. But I'm waiting.
I see what you point. I see what you mean. Because as much as I did enjoy Brielle's like first solo run that introduced her, I did think there's a lot missing there in regards to the fact that Shawty has grown up and lives in Atlanta. Like, you were in one of the blackest cities possible. And somebody that lives here, there's a lot of nuances in the city that I feel like wasn't really capitalized on with the fact that she's from here and she lived there. Also, I feel like there should be an explanation on her fucking hair at this point, because like in her intro story, we show that the purple hair was a wig, and she has like she had the braids underneath it. But like, now it seems like, motherfuckers, I think there was, I talked to you about it when I saw it in the issue in the Dracula fight, where like one of the vampires grabbed her by her hair and like slung her somewhere. I'm like,
bro. Yeah, and then it's now like her hair down. Yeah,
if you got her wig loose, that shit got to be made of vibranium, because how the fuck did you pick her up, her full body weight up, and throw her in, the wig didn't come off?
But I think from her original story to Bloodhunt, she actually made her hair that color. At least I would hope so, because that was such an odd thing to do. If you were pulling her by her hair, that's such an odd thing to do. But I think especially with the way that she had her hair cut, that her hair is actually that color now. Because originally it was a wig, yeah.
I would have preferred it to not be, just because I think you could have had a lot of subtlety there with, and showed a little bit more understanding of black people when you're writing it. So like, you could have like conversations of her like taking her braids out over like doing something certain scene. Like, it's because I'm looking at like those in between scenes that are there for character development that you'll see, where like characters will be like in between a fight or in between a mission, or maybe you start one out and you get to characterize them a little bit more and give them actual character traits. So you legit could have had a scene with her like taking her hair out and she's talking to Blade, or she's talking to her mom or whatever else, and you're using that to build it up. I feel like when stuff like the little stuff like that really goes into making them a full-fledged character and a full-fledged person,
That's why I don't want them to rush a story with her, for sure. I want them to give her, so because there's clearly a really close relationship with her and her mom, and then there's definitely that background between her mom and her dad, and then y'all got her really close to her dad almost immediately, and it's like that definitely could have been fleshed out. But now that you have her close to her dad, weirdly enough, y'all can expand on, like, they definitely need to have a conversation. I just stabbed you.
Fuck what, I feel like they need to like almost backtrack a little bit to have more of a conversation on like him abandoning her for like 13 years. Because keep in mind, like,
I wouldn't call it abandonment.
Because he hadn't met his daughter for like 13 years.
No, he did. He did meet her. And he met her, and then all of his enemies started catching up to him. So that's when he had Doctor Strange put the spell on her, and he left. And then when Doctor Strange died, then the spell broke. But that was also something because I think he said that the spell affected him as well. So he didn't know where they were up until the point where she told him where they were. So all of that was on his mom. But even still, yeah, that's a cover. Like, that's things that can be fleshed out. That's things that can be fleshed out. And then y'all got them together. They had an awkward encounter in her bedroom when, you know, she's making a joke about what to call him. And then after that, they're training, and then they're all super close. And I'm like that was fast.
As somebody that had an absent father, when that nigga just like tried to pop up in my life later on as an adult, I was like, nigga, no, why are you here? Like, bro, I'm like, I'm 18 now. Like, it's too late, bro. Like, why are you here now? I feel like that should have been a thing where she should have had a little bit more of an issue of like, there are better ways for you to protect me than just leaving me and my mother alone, like by herself. I feel like that needs to be a conversation had at some point. And honestly, that would serve to build their relationship and make it stronger going forward. I think, again, to your point, I don't know if you have anybody who will want to write this for your pick. I don't know, because I'm getting more and more into the comic verse. So remembering certain writers' names that aren't like legacy writers, like a Geoff Johns or a Claremont. I don't know, or a Kelly Thompson now with Wonder Woman stuff. I don't know who I would want to write this particular story.
The writer for Storm's comic.
Hopefully, man. I'll become a Brielle fan overnight. We're going to see.
Fleshing Storm out the way that Aurora Monroe needs to be fleshed out.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's just like elegance about her, but still has things she's going through. Like when she got diagnosed and she was sick, it's like, okay, cool. She's going through things, but at the end of the day, don't get it fucked up. This is
exactly.
I am Storm, nigga.
Exactly.
Watch who you're talking to. Talk to me nice. This is random side tangent, but we're talking about Storm and like her family. Have we ever seen Spike reappear in comics at all since he was created in the Evolution show?
Yes, but it's like an alternate universe comic.
Okay, so
it's but funny. Main universe, I don't think so.
I need Spike in the comics, man. That'd be so good. Like, oh man, that would be so sick. I love his arc and that character and the thing that his relationship with Oro in the show. But I don't know. It's just something random. I just randomly thought about him. I'm like, damn, that'd be sick. That'd be sick to see.
Well, at 50 minutes, basically.
I'll wrap up on this because I don't know if I gave like a definitive answer, but yeah, I did definitely enjoy Absolute Power reading that now more so than I did. But part of that could be like me covering it as a content creator. I really enjoyed Absolute Power. Granted, I'm also a DC fanboy bias, so there's that.
I enjoyed the both of them, but I definitely enjoyed Blood Hunt more. With the fact that Blade was the villain, seeing Blade, even though he was possessed, seeing Blade go apeshit on everybody else, it was really funny the way that he switched up his speech patterns. Because the whole time I was like, why is he talking like that? This does not seem like normal Blade speech talk.
You left a lot of the table with Blade in that story. Because he never, remember, what was it? It was the first, the first Midnight Suns run where he killed like all those soldiers in a diner and he's like,
yeah,
or went back to that, like that moment. I'm like, you left a lot of shit on the table with Blade and the things that he could have been doing in the story, because it wasn't like, from my perspective, it wasn't really Blade, because it was Varney fully in control, and like he spoke like Varney, he had thoughts like Varney. Blade was never there. I think it was, if it was a thing where Blade was more so influenced, almost like with on some, not originals, like on some and Superior Iron Man type of timing, where nobody's controlling him, but he's just, his nature of a character has been warped, where he's doing fucked up shit. Like,
well, you know, I think because he started crying before he killed all of them. It was either before or after.
It was after
he, because he does. Yeah, because he was like, this is not me. And he's like, and he started crying. And I was like, so which one is it?
Because at that point, he wasn't fully, it felt, maybe he wasn't fully under control, I guess, at that point.
I want to say it was like a half and half, because when he's like talking, it's very much Varney, but then it's like the actions he was taking, like when he was talking to Brielle, like that was definitely him talking to Brielle. Like that was his speech pattern talking to Brielle, but those were Varney's thoughts. So it was like a half and half thing. And I was like, that's why I was like, I know his soul is being tortured right now. I just know it. I feel so bad because I just know he is so hurt. But I liked both of them. I did. I liked, but I liked more so where Absolute Power led to.
Mm.
But I did like the story of Blood Hunt all the way through. I did like that. Minus those tie-ins that didn't fucking matter. Just like this one. Minus the ones that didn't matter. And them trying to convince you that Amanda Waller had a valid reason for whatever the fuck it was she was doing. I was like, that bitch is unhinged and she's crazy. That's the reason. That is the reason. Oh, I didn't get to see my daughter have her. No, fuck all of that. That bitch is crazy.
Oh, she about to come back with a vengeance too. Like, we're not seeing her memories and shit right now. I'm like, but when she get her memories back, y'all niggas
are going to be, oh my God,
ready. Because she is
coming. Oh my God. They haven't brought me and all back either. I said, listen, come on now. But thank you very much, Johnny.
Of course.
The captain, for joining in the first episode. These are going to be every other Sunday. Yeah, these are going to post every other Sunday. And you can find it on Apple, Google, Deets, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Pandora, et cetera, et cetera. So this is The Doctor's Office, and thank you guys for listening.
Bye-bye.